Okay, so the fifth aliyah of Parshas Tzav begins Vayagesh as Parachatos, Vayusmoch Aaron Uvana Besideh Amarosh Parachatos. So here there is a Korban Chatos brought, and Aaron and his sons do smicha on this Korban. So there is a question as to the nature of this Korban Chatos, both in the Torah's Konin and the Yerushalmi, as to whether this is a Korban Sibor or a Korban Yochid. And what emerges, essentially, is that this is a Korban Yochid from the fact that there is smicha that is performed by Aaron and his sons. And that is appropriate specifically because we're dealing with a Korban that is about them. And what emerges from the Yerushalmi, essentially, is that there are components of both, that the Tzibor was makdish this Korban, dedicated this Korban, and then gave it to Aaron and his sons in order for it to be effective on their behalf. And that connects to the next pasuk, Vayishchot, Vayikach Moshe as Hadam, Vayitain al Karnos Mizbeach, Saviv Be'etzba'o, Vayichateyas Hamizbeach, Yesadam Yatzak al Yisod Hamizbeach, Vayikachehu L'chaper Olav. So here at the beginning of this pasuk, Vayishchot, Vayikach Moshe as Hadam. So we have Moshe identified with the second verb in this pasuk. So does that mean he wasn't the one doing the shechita? He was only the one taking the dam? So the Malbim and the Meshech Chachma both discuss this, and they suggest that Moshe is mentioned specifically in the context of the dam, because that's where he's significant, because Moshe was functioning as the Kohen at this point, because during the Shiva Simei HaMiluim, he was the Kohen. And Shechita is Kishera Bizar. Shechita can be performed by a non-Kohen. So even if it was Moshe who performed the Shechita, that's not meaningful, so that doesn't have to be identified. But the fact that Moshe was taking the dam, that was significant, so therefore Moshe is identified in that context. Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his Emes Yaakov, goes further than this, and he notes that Vayishchot, the first word of the pasuk, has a kamatz there, and he suggests that's meant to create a absolute interruption between that and which comes afterwards, as if it was done by somebody else. And he then goes on to say that's not necessarily the case, that it was actually done by somebody else, but that that interruption actually connects it to the previous pasuk, and is meant to indicate that there's supposed to be a relationship between the smicha and the shechita. So therefore, the smicha, which as we just noted, was done by Aaron and his sons, so therefore the shechita here could be that it was done by Moshe, but there is a fundamental difference in how Moshe was doing the shechita and how he was doing the Kabbalah Sadam here. That the second he was doing as the Kohen, and the first he was doing as a shliach of Aaron. So therefore, there's two different capacities in which he was functioning, so therefore the separation indicates that. The end of the pasuk is what gets probably the most attention here in this aliyah, and that is regarding the Mizbeach. So the pasuk ends with the words, L'chaper olav, so that there shall be kapara upon it. So what does that mean? So it sounds like the Mizbeach is being prepared so that kaparos can take place upon it. And that itself is noteworthy. The Ramban writes, so that this is to make sure that the Mizbeach is now holy and prepared for that role. And the Sefer Das Torah, Derech HaMusar, he notes that we should pay attention to the fact that it's not only the korbanos that are necessary tools for kapara, but that it's also other aspects of the Mishkan and components thereof that bring about the kapara. So you see that the Mizbeach is also not just a means to an end, but is a crucial aspect of the kapara itself. But there is a very fascinating idea that the Ramban also quotes from the Torah's Kohanim, and that is that the Mizbeach itself needed some degree of kapara. That l'chaper olav means to be atone, to atone for the Mizbeach. And what he explains in that context, and there is an indication to this effect also in the Targum Yonasan, that when the call for donations went out, there were people who felt pressured and who gave against their will, perhaps. And therefore, we want to purify the Mizbeach from any type of theft, and therefore there needs to be a kapara, and that's what's being referenced here. The Targum Yonason talks about Oshek and Gezel, and we want to atone for that. So that's a fascinating idea, that there would be any kind of aspect of that. That's a very surprising concept. And as the Psalm Derech, as Reb Sinuch Zilbroyd notes, we wouldn't be talking about literal Gezel, because at the end of the day, it would be coming willingly. This is what we talk about when we refer to Avak Gezel. So if you ask somebody for something, it was called that, referred to a suda shena maspekes labalav. So if you ask somebody for their food that they're eating and they feel pressured socially to share it with you when they really don't have enough to eat for themselves, so that's called avak gezel. And that has an aspect of gezel to it, even though at the end of the day they are giving it over willingly. So there is a notion there needs to be some kind of kapara. This is similar to what the Gemara talks about in Maseches Brachos on Daf Hei Mibes. And the Gemara tells us that Rav Huna had financial setbacks, and when he was told to look into his behavior, so they pointed out to him that he took things in compensation from those who he felt were mistreating him in a financial fashion, and that even though he felt he was entitled to do that, Gonev Basar Ganev, Toim Taim, the person who is stealing from a Ganev is also tasting the aspect of Ganeva. So there is a taste of Ganeva that also requires a kapara, even if it isn't an actual victimization in the fullest sense of the word. So here, the Mizbeach needs a type of kapara, even if it isn't the actual kind of gezel that has to be returned. If in the end of the day it's actually handed over willingly, it still has an aspect of something unjust, and therefore it needs to receive some kind of a atonement. And the Sefer Chavetz HaSharon, so he addresses the fact that it does seem that if at the end of the day it was handed over willingly, so wouldn't we say Dvarim Shebelev Einam Dvarim, and therefore that should be a valid transaction. So he suggests that nonetheless it is a gnai, it is something that is an embarrassment to the Mizbeach, and therefore that needs to be addressed, and that needs to be atoned for. And he also suggests that maybe there's an additional element here that is specific to the donations to the Mishkan, and that is that they need to be benediva salev, that they need to come from the sincere, voluntary nature of the heart, as the language of the Psukim many times. And therefore, if that is in any degree lacking, so that is something that is a fundamental problem and wouldn't necessarily be the case elsewhere. And he quotes from the Tshuva of Shav HaKohen that this is the explanation of why it is that when it comes to the prohibition of Tmura, if you want to switch the Kedusha from an animal that was already sanctified to another animal, which is a prohibition in the Torah, so that doesn't take effect the machshava. And the Rishonim try to figure out why that is, because normally hektish does take effect the machshava, so it's not clear if tamura is just a form of hektish, why doesn't that take place the machshava? There are some interesting suggestions to that. For example, there's an interesting suggestion of the Magid Mizritch based on the Gemara in Maseches Brachos on Daf Vav and Aleph, which says that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives you credit for a mitzvah that you want to do and you're not successful in doing, while elsewhere the Gemara in Kedushin says that you're not held liable for an avera that you intend to do, that you don't succeed in doing. So there he suggests that that's why it's a different usage of the word machshava. This question is really pashut pshat, but he says that the idea that hektish is chal machshava is similar to that idea that you're credited with a mitzvah that you intend to do. But tmura is an avera, so an avera doesn't happen machshava. It's an interesting application of the idea. But here he suggests that Shuvas v'shav hakohen, that the reason hektish works be machshava is because it comes from the nediva salev, and if it's lacking in nedivus, if it's an avera, so that's contradictory to nedivus, and therefore that doesn't take effect. So in a slightly different application, here The Chavetzalos HaSharon suggests that maybe this is a specific halacha regarding the Mishkan, that the contributions have to come from a position of nedivus, and if there's any deficiency in the nedivus, so therefore there is a incompatibility with the Mishkan, and therefore there needs to be a kapara for the Mishkan. And the next pasuk here, in pasuk Tazayin, we find the language Vayikach es kol achelev asher al hakerev ves yoseres hakavei veshtei haklayos ves chabehen veyakter Moshe hamizbecha. So here he takes the fat, and this is burnt on the mizbech. So it's a fascinating idea quoted in the Sefer Otzer Plos HaTorah, in keeping with the title of the Sefer, it quotes very unusual things. So he quotes from the Sefer Adaras Eliyahu, not the one from the Vilna Gaon, but from Eliyahu of Bar Kolonimus, that there was a practice to light candles made of chalev, specifically at the table, because of the idea of the shulchan domel mizbeach. So in order to make that comparison more complete, so there was a practice to do that. And in the Sefer Yofa Lulev, in Arachayim, in Siman Reish Pei Dalid, Aleph, he objected to this, because maybe the chalev is going to fall into the food, so that sounds like a pretty dangerous idea. So indeed it does sound like that. But it brings to mind, all the more so, this idea of how far one would go with trying to evoke the notion of a kapara coming from the Mizbeach and coming from all of the elements of the Mishkan and the Karbanos. And also what we've noted, that the idea of a kapara is not only through the practicing of these dinim, but also through focusing on their symbolism and their message, and the more we internalize what the message is, and the more they corrective to the behavior that sometimes comes through internalizing that message, that's where the kapara comes from. So therefore, looking for various ways to preserve that symbolism, and therefore also to correct the behavior that these messages are targeted at, is another way to preserve the kapara components that are associated with them.